I would like to invite each of you to listen carefully to God's voice in your heart. Listen to His voice. Do not be afraid. Do not be afraid.
Hello and welcome. I'm Father Chad Arnold, and you are listening to About 4 O'Clock, a podcast on vocations and discernment. Today we're coming to you from the St. John Paul II studio with Father Garrett Burns.
Hello.
And Father Drew Hoffman.
What's up?
All right, any guesses why we're at St. John Paul II studio today?
Dun, 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 dun.
What was that?
Yeah.
The Sanford and Son theme song is perpetually in my mind for years. Like, I don't know why. I've never watched the show or anything. I just know it. I think from Scrubs, is why I know even the theme song, but it's just like always in my brain.
I feel like that's a Homer Simpsons thing where someone could be asked like a really serious question and it just goes to his brain and it's some TV show.
When I think of John Paul II, I think of Sanford and Son. Give me a second.
July 18th.
Yeah, you're not going to get it.
No.
Totus Tuus.
Ooh.
Yeah. I'll be at Totus Tuus when this.
That's why I did it.
The day this goes out. I'm helping with camp.
And that's why I did it. That's
okay. That's good to know. Good. Yeah. We can move on. Now,
it actually was no other reason than somehow we haven't named the studio after John Paul II. It had to happen. So I don't. You can make the tenable connection. As a young man, he liked to write plays and do that. And so you'd actually thrown this topic out a few episodes before, if you remember, but trying to come up with what are some of the best fictional priests out there in movies and in books. And so in appreciation of St. John Paul II's appreciation for theater and fiction, in his honor, we're going to put forward some of the best fictional priests we can think of. This was actually a little bit harder than I thought it was going to be. Like when I started, like, who is a really good fiction? It took me more work than I thought of to come up with a few. So I'll be curious what you guys got.
First one I thought of, maybe because, I don't know if this is a humble brag, but I've actually met the real life guy. So The guy in The Rite, if you've seen that, kind of like an exorcist movie, but Anthony Hopkins plays this guy that goes to Rome and he goes to school to be an exorcist and then performs exorcisms back in the U.S.
I don't watch those movies.
Yeah.
They're not good for me.
See, I've never watched The Exorcist or any of those, but this I thought was, I don't know, more well done. And for what I had read before was more true to actual just Catholic practice and everything. And then, yeah, it was so funny. I had no idea. We went out with some friends that were classmates in San Jose and we're just hanging out with some priests. And it's just this guy in like a polo and he just seems like a pretty chill guy, whatever. And then it comes out that he is the guy that this movie is based on. And he's just this totally, you know, middle-aged priest and whatever, but I think it actually does a pretty good job of expressing some of those things, and he's portrays that well. I mean, he's Anthony Hopkins, great actor.
So are we calling it, though, fictional because it's just based on him? Because it sounds like it's a real-life guy. Maybe Tracy Fox needs to have a little talk to you about fiction and non-fiction
here. But he's depicted in The Rite.
I'm glad you said that because I actually was going to say something that was going to be on the same way. So now you sound dumb and I don't sound
okay, perfect.
I almost put Death Comes from the Archbishop. I'm like, I took him off my list. I'm like, no, that's a real person. This is fictional.
But he's different. The name is different in that.
Okay.
Not LeMay. Okay, so I'm with you there.
What was yours?
Well, I was going to just point out, I used to live with a priest who Martin Sheen played in a movie.
Really?
Yeah. It's just,
The Mighty Ducks?
I've not ever seen this movie. But there's a movie that Kevin Willmott, who teaches at University of Kansas and grew up in Junction City, made a movie kind of about his life in Junction City and stuff like that. And I haven't seen it. I think there's some R-rated stuff in it. So But he meets Martin Sheen in a coffee shop one time, tells him about the movie that he's making. Martin Sheen's like, I'd like to be in it. So then the priest was not going to be in the movie. He makes this very brief part in the movie for Martin Sheen to play Father Frank Cody, who is the pastor at St. Thomas More in Manhattan, because that he was the priest in Junction City when he was growing up. It's a real small role. It's not really that connected. It was just to get Martin Sheen in the movie, from my understanding.
That is so unbelievable from so many points of reference.
It absolutely is. But he's in the movie, and Father Frank Cody's the man. I really admire Father Frank Cody, and I lived with him for 3 or 4 months while I was in Manhattan because our rectory got torn down. But not a fictional priest, a real dude.
Yeah, we did not understand the assignment so far.
Okay, the other one I was going to say.
Fail.
Yeah, so I didn't really have another one that was like that, but I wanted to mention that the Martin Sheen thing is kind of cool.
That is cool.
I have a real one. Do you have a real one?
I have plenty of real ones. I have like 8 real ones.
I kept looking at like different ones and I'm like, that priest isn't great though. Every time I came to it. So my best was the bishop from Les Mis. Mm.
Oh, that's a good one. That's great.
Which I love the book, but it's a fantastic portrayal of mercy and generosity and without anything expecting. I love the bishop's character in Les Mis, even though it's, you know, a small part, but everything that happens later was done by his influence. So again, like so many times in priests, we step into someone's life just for a little bit. And if the Spirit's working through us, sometimes we're able to touch their life and we may not see them again for decades, but that something in that moment through the Spirit working through it had a profound effect on where their life went through that. And you definitely see that in the character of the bishop in Les Mis, which, fun little fact, so the, I want to say recent movie of Les Mis with Hugh Jackman, mm-hmm. until I looked it up and it was a decade ago that actually came out.
Yeah, that's right.
Doesn't seem possible. But if you've seen it, I have. I like it. I recommend it.
Awesome.
The bishop character in the Les Mis movie is actually played by the guy who originally played Jean Valjean in the original Broadway.
Oh,
that. So he did the role of Jean Valjean in like the late 70s, early 80s, and they brought him back to play the role of the bishop for that movie.
Wow.
So he was my number one that I picked. And he's actually fictional, gentlemen. He doesn't exist in reality.
Like 7 fictional ones on here, but when you said that, then I was thinking about that. We mentioned a couple of them that are interesting when we brought this up. Hugh from Scarlet and the Black,
mm-hmm.
and Father Gabriel from...
Father Hugh, real. He was a real person.
That's another one.
He was a real person.
Then I got confused throughout all of this. Father Gabriel from The Mission.
Tracy Fox, please come on this podcast and help us.
I'm trying to think if I messed
us.
Up any of these other ones. Then Father Gabriel from The Mission.
That's okay. a great one.
Watch The Mission if you haven't seen The Mission.
Yep, agreed.
Father Barry from On the Waterfront, who stands up to the priest, and he eventually stands up to the, I don't know if it's the mob or the, it's the down at the docks. He's the one in. He has like people come to the parish and is trying to allow them to be able to stand up for him. Father Chuck O'Malley from Going My Way,
oh, okay,
Bells
yeah,
of
yeah.
St. Mary's. Yeah, we mentioned that. He's just Bing Crosby.
One of my favorites.
Having some fun. You haven't seen it. So though, from movie, Father Maple, who I don't think is a priest, from Moby Dick.
Hmm.
He gives the very famous, Orson Welles plays him in the movie. And he gives this very famous, that's worth YouTubing, the Father Maple homily. Bishop Barron talks about it a lot.
Hmm.
And he goes up into this kind of ambo made that looks like a ship's stern or something like that. And Orson Welles is just being Orson Welles and awesome and gives this really powerful homily. But he's not dressed like a priest, even though he's named Father Maple.
Mm-hmm.
Books, the two that came to my mind, Power, he's compelling. The Whiskey Priest, he's never named, in Power and the Glory, is like my favorite. It's just a magnificent character.
It's a great portrayal of how weakness and strength can coexist side by side and how God can work through that. I love the book too, and sometimes I wonder if it's more popular among priests than lay people.
I mean, I think it is. I think it absolutely is.
It's a classic. When I was a young priest, I loved it so much. I did like a group book study at the parish I was at, and a lot of very good and holy people like, oh, Father's doing this book. It's going to be great. And that, and they started reading. I remember getting halfway through and several people like, Father, why are we reading this? The only reason I'm still reading this is because you keep saying it's good. And it was more depressing than anything to them. But as priests, it's hopeful in the sense that, okay, even though I'm weak and faulted, God can still do some things through me. So it's, for us, I think it's more hopeful than other lay people.
Agreed. And then one that I love, but also going to be depressing, is Come Rat, Come Rope and Father Robin, who is a fictional character, but all that stuff really happened. It's about the English persecutions. And Father Robin is engaged. He's 17 years old. He's engaged to this girl. The girl says, hey, you're supposed to be a priest. And being a priest at that time means going over to France, getting ordained, mm-hmm. coming back over and definitely being persecuted. She hides him when he comes back after he becomes a priest. And then he's eventually, spoiler alert, martyred. And his dad reenters the church while he's being martyred.
Mm.
It's awesome. It's awesome. Awesome. But Father Robin's an incredible character. So a little best of both worlds, Chad.
You exceeded the assignment.
Jeepers, fictional. Do you have any fictional ones?
Yeah, the two
non-real.
The two movie ones I thought of were Calvary. Came out in like 2014, 2015. Mm-hmm. So
that one's a hard one to watch for me.
Brendan Gleeson.
A lot of these are depressing ones.
But I guess there's just one scene or line that really affected me. So maybe that's why I really like it. But basically this Irish priest, so Ireland, right? Most people are quote unquote Catholic, but pretty against the church. And so this priest actually receives basically a death threat in the midst of confession, but he lives with just a great courage and boldness to still just go forward with his ministry. And then there, he has an associate who, the line that stuck out with me basically at one point, because he was a really nice guy, but not very bold and courageous like this pastor. And he basically just tells him he should just go and be an insurance salesman because he's very nice. So that was just was something I go back to a lot of. Priesthood is not just being nice. It's good to be kind to people, but there's a boldness and a courage to it as well. And so, it's a tough watch, but I think Brendan Gleeson's is a good portrayal of that. Another one of those small roles is a movie you've brought up before of Lady Bird. And the priests, I don't even know their names or if they're named, but I thought they just gave a good vibe in her Catholic girls' school. That is a good portrayal of that.
Impacts her a lot for years to come.
Yeah. But
just these guys were real guys. Have you seen Gran Torino?
Yeah.
I don't know that I love the priest in Gran Torino.
Yeah. He's
like a young kid. He doesn't come over in clerics often. He's kind of just in the collared shirt.
Doesn't he kind of get better in the movie?
I think he gets better.
Like,
but then also
better
Clint Eastwood chills out a little bit, I guess.
Yeah.
He's fine. He's a weird guy, I think.
Yeah.
But.
Yeah, I don't remember being moved by his portrait. I don't remember disliking it. I don't remember really liking it either.
Last one I had was a book and a movie, and actually the portrayal of the priest is pretty different in Silence, where there's these Jesuit missionaries, and so they go into Japan, I'm pretty sure, am I right there? And there's going to be persecution and everything, and in the movie, you at least get the sense that they both step on the fumi, basically, like, they don't accept martyrdom and receive martyrdom, and if I remember right, in the book, it's not quite that, like, at least there's one priest that basically just receives his martyrdom fully. So yeah, I thought that was just a good portrayal of that, of the dedication it takes in a priest, and they're well made. The movie's well made, and it's a great book. So
I would like to see a portrayal of a lighthearted priest, but anytime that pops up, they're usually making fun of the church.
Yeah.
So it's not, it's like, at least from a secular mind, you can either be holy or a buffoon, but there's not a lot of room in between, which is not true.
You need to watch Bells of St. Mary's, man. This is where some of your ignorance is showing here.
I guess.
Bing Crosby is the middle ground here.
It exists already out there. So my super nerdy one that I came up, like, I'm a little, this falls in the same category as Weird Al for me. Like, I know this, but I'm a little embarrassed to that. But one of the alternate dimensions of X-Men, Nightcrawler, who is a very religious Catholic, but also becomes a priest.
Wow.
Yeah.
Who's Nightcrawler? the guy who doesn't know who Giannis Antetokounmpo is. Rolling his eyes at me.
Nightcrawler, I don't even know where to begin. So he's...
I'm not joking. I legitimately have no idea who that is.
It's almost like you have never read X-Men for sake of your Catholicism.
It is almost as if I have not.
You got some extra time this summer. That's what you can be.
I know Wolverine. That's the one I know.
Fair enough. Okay. So Nightcrawler.
He's not a priest.
Wolverine's not.
That
not
would
even
be
Catholic.
An electric factory.
Nightcrawler is a blue demon looking guy. He's got like a forked tail. He's a Catholic from Germany who grew up in a circus. And then his power is he can vamp, which is like he disappears in smoke and can reappear anywhere he can see visually. So he can't very well vamp out of places he can't see visually, at least in some of that. And so there's. At one point, in one of the alternate dimensions, he's like a friar and is protecting the monastery. And so he vamps in, grabs someone's head, and vamps off. So he decapitates him in order. I mean, he's a bad guy, so it's okay. But he's a badass monk in at least one of the...
My goodness.
But he becomes a priest as well. So there's actually... So you can look at some of the old Marvel comics, and there are images of him like praying the rosary. And it's kind of a cool image as he's like debating the morality of his actions of the X-Men and to do good or bad. There's like some drawn scenes of him like saying funerals where like Charles Xavier is there, but at the funeral of some other mutant or things like that. So
wow.
Nightcrawler.
Father Nightcrawler.
Father.
That's
Kurt
sick.
Wagner, if you want to know his actual name. He's Father Wagner. Respect. Thank
it's
you.
Father Wagner.
It's only as an X-Man that he is Nightcrawler.
Jeepers creepers.
Hey, at least he's fictional. at least I understood the purpose of the assignment.
We did Saints as NBA players. We'll do Saints as X-Men at some point.
Yes.
Saints as superheroes kind of would be a fun
actually,
one.
Actually, that could
and
be good.
I know Marvel stuff. I don't really know the other. I don't know some of these other ones, but I know the basics.
Yeah, okay. We could think about Saints as superheroes. I could hold my own on that
one.
Yeah,
that'd be good.
I read a lot of comic books as a kid. One of the neat things about all these fictional priests and all of the X-Men is they're all different personalities that are brought seamless. My
You're so good
move from one topic to another is seamless. You can't see this, listeners. They're laughing because they know what's coming next, but we're very like a well-oiled machine moving from one topic to another. All of these superheroes, all of these fictional priests bring different abilities that the Lord can use. And so that's what we want to talk about today as our main topic. We actually got a question from a listener, and so I'll read it off to you. He writes, "Diocesan priests all live so differently from one another. They seem to all have very different spiritualities and different gifts and talents, which seem to shape the focus of their pastoral ministry. In what ways can these different gifts and talents be lived out in diocesan priesthood, and in what ways have these differences affected the focus of your individual lives in the priesthood?" Now, there's a lot there in that one question, but for me, one of the things that first jumps out is really just the beauty and the glory and the design of God, that he can take all of these different pieces that are priests, that are parts of the church, and use them in different ways to bring about the mission of the gospel. So this very idea, the differences, strengths, weaknesses, all of that, is actually something I pray about a lot, that is an exciting thing for me and something I think about a lot because I think it is so important.
Yeah, I think that the presbyterate is really, there'd be a hard-pressed to find a group that is more different
right.
than a presbyterate in the sense of backgrounds, likes, dislikes, talents, even on a theological spectrum, an appropriate theological spectrum of passions and things like that, of where areas of maybe some focus.
Some people like basketball, some people like X-Men.
And really, that's true that there's so many of the priests you could like the most, the whole gamut. And Father Aaron Spexarth will often say this, that one of the cool parts about being a priest is you become friends with guys that in the regular world you would never have become friends with, just because you don't share that many interests with guys, but you share the priesthood and they've become some of your best friends.
That's true.
Even if you just met them because you worked at a job together, or even if you went to school together, you probably wouldn't have clicked on it. So that's been, I think, a grace amongst the presbyterate, that I'm friends with guys that probably in the natural order of things I wouldn't have been friends with.
Yeah.
And I think it's especially cool because from an outside perspective, you would probably expect every priest to like conform to this same likes and dislikes, same kind of person. And if you really get to know a lot of priests, that is, yeah, just not true, opposite. Like you're saying. And so just the width and breadth of that's allowed and can succeed and bear fruit as a priest, for me, has just given a lot of confidence and freedom. And especially even just in the different ways that guys minister and work, even just like simple things, practical things of, you know, kind of what hours are they in the office, or where do they do their work and those kind of things. I've seen a lot different. And that's very freeing to me, that there's not like this one way to be a priest, and that I've got to figure out how I can change myself so that I can get to where I can be that priest. No, I kind of have my own natural tendencies and gifts, and I can live that out. And that's how I'm going to be the best priest I can be. So
even as I just kind of look around here, we're all in clerics. Gary's got Converses on, Chad's got cowboy boots on, I've got Nikes on, black Nikes on. Even though, you know, that's a silly simple thing. And a lot of guys would have really nice dress shoes or something. I mean, some guys wear Birks and some guys wear...
These are nice dress shoes.
They're not, no. Even something like, we do things differently, mm-hmm. and that's great.
Well, I think that's a great point too, what you were getting there, Gary, with seminarians. A lot of them come in, they're like, this is what a priest is, and I've got to become this. No, I mean, there are common things, you know, we all have to show up in the office. We have to be a docility of spirit. We have to be able to put the needs of others before our own. We've got to be able to follow the rubrics. I mean, there are things that we all have to follow, but in personality, the Lord is calling you to be Father so-and-so, not, you know, I can't look and say, hey, Father Landsrath's really holy. I want to be like him. Well, God's not calling me to be Father Landsrath. He's already made that. He's calling me to be Father Chad, and that's going to bring my own personalities, my own strengths, my own weaknesses along with that. And so, so many times when seminarians come in there, well, I want to be like this seminary. I want to be with this priest. Well, they have good qualities you can emulate and you can grow in those virtues, but you are still going to be you, and that's a good thing. And the Lord wants you to be you and to work through that with your different gifts and talents.
Father Pat York preached the first mass of Father John Tolbert, and afterward, I think I told Gare, that is exactly the homily I would have given. Like, and I realized, like, even my preaching style is similar, but we're actually pretty different dudes in a lot of other ways. And I've got a lot of Father Gail Hammerschmidt, Father Adam Kider, and Father Chad Arnold, and Father Garrett in there. And those all things can meld and be really cool, because that's what we need. And we tell other people that the church needs you. The church needs you to be you, and the church needs priests to be themselves. And one of the things that I preach about more than almost anything else is this idea that I was presented in seminary, that you've got these transcendentals, truth, beauty, goodness. So the more true, beautiful, and good something becomes, the closer it gets to God. And vice versa, the closer one gets to God, the more true, beautiful, and good one becomes. And we had a professor, Father Dr. Feingold, who said that individuality actually is like that as well. That the closer one gets to God, the more yourself you become. And the more yourself you actually become, the closer you get to God. And C.S. Lewis comments on this, says, people think that Christianity is a bunch of cookie cutters that all look the same, just the opposite. He says, how boring and dull all the tyrants and dictators of history, how gloriously different are the saints. Because the more one actually becomes who they were made to be, like God, the more unique actually they become. And that's a great desire of the human heart. That's like a great desire of my heart, to be myself. But that means growing closer to God, actually.
That's fascinating to me. That's another one. I can sit with that for a while. Just the idea that, yeah, my individuality as I come closer to God. On one level, it's conform more to Christ, but also I become more truly who God made me to be, which is an individual being. And again, part of the beauty and glory of God. So that as I grow closer to him and grow in holiness, I do grow in a certain type of individuality. I want to pray with that for a while.
John Paul II, there has never been a human being in the history of the world like John Paul II. There is no comparison to John Paul II. He doesn't compare to Leo or to Gregory or to even any of the other great popes of history. And he doesn't, because few humans in all of history have been more themselves than Pope St. John Paul II. And then look what impact that has.
Well, and I think you can throw that same Philip Neri, Francis of Assisi, Catherine of Siena. I sometimes, when I'm talking with guys, I refer to some of those saints as, I don't know I've used the term in the podcast before, but God's prime numbers, because they don't really divide down to anything else. I mean, they are just them. And especially those that are those we just mentioned, they're not entirely imitatable, because it is so them. Like, the history of Franciscans proves how unimitatable St. Francis is. He's, and Catherine of Siena and Philip Neri, all of them are just so very close to God, and with that came a very specific individuality.
Catherine says, become who you were born to be and you set the world on fire, which can become kind of a cheesy phrase, and kind of, you know, you see it on an Instagram or on a embroidered on a pillow or something like that.
All my pillows are embroidered
like
with it.
Father Garrett's Heinz Place, whatever, Heinz Feet in High Places thing and stuff like that. And so, but what does she also say? What is my nature? It is fire. Okay. So she becomes her nature. And that, her nature then inflames everything else, because her nature then is made in the image and likeness of God. And that's what the world needs. And so, man, I talk about this all the time. Everyone who goes out and, you know, on a college campus and they're doing their own thing and partying and bars and all this stuff, it's like, you know what? You look like everybody else at this party. This is so boring. You look like every single other person at this bar or in doing it like in your fraternity, sorority, or dorm or team or something like that. It's like, this is not unique at all. You think you're being so rebellious and different. And it's like, no, this is boring, man. And I just think there's something so cool about being yourself. And that sounds cheesy, but I only find that going closer to the Lord.
I think to understand this more and more and to live it also fights against one of those, I think it was Bishop Gerber would call it, the cancers of the priesthood. Yeah. And you could apply those to someone discerning or just the Christian life, but of comparison as well, that I don't need to be that other priest. You know, he preaches so well, or he's so good at teaching, or that kid at my Newman Center just seems so holy, seems to pray well, he's funny too, or whatever, that they're their gifts become my gifts. I feel this, yeah, more in the priesthood because we are united more deeply in those things that than that stuff that separates us. That another guy has a gift and I rejoice in that mm-hmm. as if it was mine. And so that fights against that those cancers that are tough for a priest, tough in discernment, just tough living the Christian life and doesn't let us be ourselves as God is revealing us to ourselves.
And that's very scriptural. I mean, the idea that the foot isn't the hand, and that's okay. Why doesn't the eye say, I'm not like the ear? Well, no, in the body of Christ, we need all of those pieces. And I think, as you were saying, Gare, there is that, it's such a human tendency. We're all very good about seeing the gifts in others mm-hmm. and failing to see them in ourselves. And yet our Lord tells us, you know, the golden rule to love others as you love yourself. Well, it presupposes you love yourself, which means you've got to be able to recognize your own gifts and to be grateful for that and to give the thanks to God. And when you can appreciate your own gifts, it also moves you to being more comfortable with the gifts of others. Because like you said, you're not comparing like, okay, yeah, he's really good at this. The Lord has worked through me in these ways, so I can be comfortable with that. And it makes the church healthier, richer, more dynamic. I know in my own priesthood, and you guys have probably had the same experience, the priests I've lived with, I've become friends with them, but we're very different personalities. Like you were saying, Drew, in a natural course of things, I don't know if I would have been friends, if our paths would have crossed, absolutely. I would have become friends with these guys. And they approach pastoral ministry differently than I do, with their different gifts and their different weaknesses from mine. And there can be a temptation like, well, they should do it like me, or I'm frustrated with them. And there's a tension in that, but I think that is so healthy. So often in our world, we're trying to release all tension, but that's not a healthy way to live. I think of the analogy of like just simple motors. If you got your tension belt, not enough tension and it doesn't work. Too much tension and it breaks. You got to have the right amount. And so I think it right now in the diocese, it's really popular, you know, building parish teams, and that's a really great thing. But I think one of the temptations in that is, well, I'm going to build a team of like-minded people that all have the same goals. And I'm not sure that's the healthiest machine. We need that tension. And I have experienced that with the pastors I've served under, the priests I've worked with, good men who I respect, who love God and love the people of God, but very different abilities than mine and different focuses than mine. And that can create tension in the rectory, but if you can appreciate the gifts of the other person, it then can be moved to a healthy tension that actually makes the parish and everything else operate on a better level.
And then you know somebody you can call. Like I've recognized that a few times in my priesthood of, okay, I'm about to make this decision and I'm sensing I kind of usually tend towards, maybe I'm a little lenient on this type of thing, but I know that guy is not, and I'm gonna call him and say, well, how does this sound to you? And if he says, that sounds good, then that just gives me another piece of information in that discernment, and that those guys, again, then his gifts become my gifts because it's not like whatever the thing is, or I wish I could preach like him. Well, maybe I just call him and say, what are you preaching on this weekend? Right, and he gives me some help, and then his gifts become
that,
mine.
That's a great point. I've done that a few times with emails or homilies like that are touching on a touchy subject. I'm like, okay, this is the best I can do this. I know this priest has a very different perspective or a different approach to things, and I'll send it off to him and get his feedback. And I've done that for a couple of brother priests as well. And it is really helpful of like, oh, no, they say that's fine, or nope, they needed a change. This paragraph sounds accusatory, or whatever it is. It's super helpful. But again, because they see it with different gifts and different eyes, and working together, we can serve more people that way.
Book recommendation. Team of Rivals, which is about
Love it.
It's what the such movie Lincoln is based on. Yeah. I think it's a Spielberg movie.
Right.
Lincoln is based on
Daniel Day-Lewis.
Yeah. And it's the story of how Lincoln is confident enough in himself and understands his weaknesses well enough that Seward is a Secretary of State, and Seward was like who everyone thought was going to be the Republican nominee, and the Postmaster General and Secretary of War are all the guys who came in right behind him to become president. But he's both those things can be true at the same time. Confident enough in myself, knowledgeable about my own weaknesses. I need this whole squad if we're going to save the Union. And that applies to the priests as well, amongst priests and amongst teams with the people of God.
And one of the things I love about that book and history, and it's so true, and I think parlays into priesthood too, is in the beginning, this team of rivals, his cabinet that he constructed are all these different people who at the time most people thought were bigger political lights than Lincoln mm-hmm. himself was. And they all kind of looked down upon him and didn't think much of him. But because his own confidence in his own abilities and his ability to be able to lean on them, he gradually rose in their estimation, and by the time of his death, all of his cabinet, who started off thinking not much of him, were saying, you know, he's one of the greatest presidents we've ever had, which history tends to vindicate and hold him up. But you're exactly right. It's that quality of being comfortable in his own abilities, but to respect those that were different from him. And yeah, that I second that recommendation of book. Fantastic book.
You can see it kind of with priests, because when you're in a parish, obviously it depends on what parish you're in, and maybe some of your real strengths. This is a parish that seems to be opposite of where maybe my natural strengths lie. And that's a great experience, because then you get to increase some of those and bring some of your strengths to those places and stuff like that. But you can also see it kind of in the things guys are involved in outside of their parishes. Guys maybe like helping with tech, or like helping with X or Y or Z. So you can kind of get to see that. And what do guys do outside of their normal parish life, but is also encouraging the kingdom of God, a passion for engaged. Some guys just love engaged encounter and things like that. So it's kind of fun to watch what are guys passionate about that maybe they don't always get to do in their daily parish ministry.
And you even see it kind of come out in good hobbies. So seminarians have, they see their own gifts or they see their own abilities. And there's sometimes this question, well, how can God work through this? If it is a good that you like and you are loving God, he's going to find a way to do that. And that includes like hobbies. And I think of like Father Derek Tommy, who likes kayaking. He takes his couples who are going through marriage prep kayaking, something I would never do, something that doesn't even fully make sense to me. Why? But it makes sense for him and they like it. And so the Lord working through his different abilities, his different hobbies and passions and bringing good about it. And so, you know, maybe you are an X-Men nerd and like those things as a kid. The Lord can find a way to use that. Maybe you do spend too much time thinking and watching and playing basketball. The Lord can do that. Use that too. Even I'm sure there's a place for NASCAR fans out there somewhere.
A deep, dark part of the church. So I don't know where.
Alabama needs you. But yeah, so that don't be afraid of what gifts that you don't have. Don't let the lack of gifts be your worry for discernment. Look at what you do have and trust that the Lord can work through that. And he will probably do it in surprising ways and probably do it in beautiful ways. So I think we'll leave it there for today. Thanks for listening to About 4 O'Clock. If you have questions you'd like us to address, you can email us at wichitavocations@gmail.com. You can also visit us at our website, about4.org. Father Drew has the final word today.
From St. Oscar Romero, the former Archbishop of San Salvador, who was martyred in 1980, there are many things that can only be seen through eyes that have cried.
See you next week.